I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome to The Connection. Psychologist Robert Copeland says that many of us are not getting enough time alone to be with ourselves, a condition he calls a loneliness. He also says that alone time gets a bad rap. It's often confused with loneliness, that painful feeling of isolation and disconnection. Being alone has also been used as a form of punishment, like being sent to your room for misbehaving, even sentenced to solitary confinement. Copeland has been researching and touting the benefits of solitude for years and wants to make it a bigger and better part of our lives. He believes that carving out even 15 minutes a day for yourself, however you choose to use it, is restorative and can enhance your relationship with yourself and with others. Robert Copeland is a psychology professor at Carleton University in Canada and got interested in solitude watching young children at play. His new book is titled The Joy of Solitude, How to Reconnect with Ourselves in an Overconnected World. And he joins us today on The Connection to discuss why we need solitude, what it can teach us about ourselves, and how it can spark creativity. And Robert Copeland, nice to have you with us on the show.
Hi, Marty. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. You have been studying solitude for many years now, and I'm curious, what do you do to get that restorative experience of solitude?
Oh, what a great way to start this discussion. And I think it actually catches a theme that I think is really important, is that everyone's going to find their own thing to do in solitude, right? I think there's this myth that, you know, in order to get the benefits of solitude, we have to, you know, put out a yoga mat and fold our legs and sit down and meditate for an hour. And don't get me wrong, meditation is awesome and it's very good for our health and our well-being, but that's only one way that you can benefit from being alone. And I think it's really important to just find something that works for you, something that's engaging, something that you enjoy, that you find meaningful. And so for me, what I do for my alone time is I like to go for a walk, and I'm lucky enough to live in an area not too far from some trees. And I will just take myself out and take a stroll for however long I have available to myself. And it's, you know, you hear the sounds of, you know, branches breaking while you're walking in the woods, and it's nice and peaceful, and maybe there's some birds singing, and it just gives you a chance to kind of catch your breath and reset and calm down and restore yourself and just, you know, get lost in your head for a little bit, which I think is a good summary of a lot of the reasons why we need time alone.
You know, we are told that we are social creatures, that human beings are social creatures in part for survival. I mean, going back to our founding as human beings, we needed each other because we had to defend ourselves and each other against a very dangerous world. But are we also creatures that need time alone?
Yeah. So again, just to be super clear, humans need social connection. We all need other people. And, you know, you did a great job just there summarizing. It goes back a long way. You know, we have this thing called the need to belong, which is a fundamental aspect of being human. Being around other people, when we're around others, it raises our mood. It makes us feel better. We have the support that we get from social connection. There is absolutely no replacing the value and the benefits of being around with others. And we can say that, but I think we can also say that humans need solitude. And this is discussed a lot less. And because, of course, there's been so much focus on what happens if we don't get enough social connection, right? And we rightly pay a lot of attention to loneliness, which, you know, you mentioned at the outset, is this sort of this discrepancy that we get in terms of what we would like and what we experience in our social lives, right? It's a dissatisfaction with our social lives. And if we're not getting enough time with others, it's really bad for us. It makes us feel terrible. And, you know, it can lead to much more serious problems with our well-being and our mental health and even our physical health. And so I always feel like it's really important to emphasize that, you know, we do need to pay attention to this. Like, you know, people talk about the loneliness epidemic. It's a real thing. And I would never, ever want to be interpreted as downplaying the importance of paying attention to loneliness and doing everything we can to make sure that people are not socially isolated and that they're getting that social connection. But I would also say at the same time, we also need solitude.
Well, I'm sure you have been asked this untold numbers of times about the difference then between loneliness, which as you describe is a very painful experience, and solitude, which is obviously being alone. How do you see them, the differences between those states of being?
Yeah, that's a really important distinction to make. And you're right, they often do get kind of, you know, used interchangeably. So, as we've said, loneliness is a feeling. It's a bad feeling, and it's a dissatisfaction with our social lives. But again, like you can feel lonely even when you're surrounded by people,
Right.
right? A lot of people have the experience where they'll go to a party, maybe they don't know that many people there, and they'll spend the evening off by themselves, watching everyone else seemingly having these intimate, wonderful, enjoyable conversations and laughing at inside jokes, and they kind of look around and pretend to be
Been there,
occupied.
done
And
that, yes.
yeah, and by the end of the night, you could leave feeling more lonely than when you got there, because it's not just about being around other people, it's about the quality of that social connection, right? And of course, we can be alone and not feel lonely at all. So if loneliness is a feeling, I would say solitude is a place. And it's a place, particularly if we choose to go there, where we can experience a lot of really good things.
And underscoring that word choose, whereas loneliness can often feel like an imposition, whereas, as you describe, solitude is something that we carve out for ourselves.
Yes, that's exactly true. Loneliness most often results from unwanted solitude, right? Solitude that's due to external circumstances, like, your plans are canceled on the Friday night and suddenly you're sitting by yourself and you're imagining other people out having a good time. Or you move to a new city and you don't, have a social connection to a community just yet. So you're spending a lot of this kind of unplanned or unwanted time alone. And of course, anything that we do that we don't want is not going to make us feel good. But you're right, particularly when we choose to do it, if we plan a little bit of solitude into our daily routine. And as you mentioned at the outset, even for as little as 15 minutes a day, there's like a, that's a dose that seems to be enough to have some lasting positive benefits.
You mentioned when plans are canceled. I'm sort of at the age now when plans are canceled, I'm like, yay! Oh boy, this thing called time, right?
Yeah, it is. I agree. People talk about the fear of missing out, right? FOMO is an acronym that
Right.
you see around where people are worried that they're missing out on stuff. It's particularly prevalent when we go on social media and see they're all shiny, happy people having a good time. But people are also starting to study what they call JOMO, which is the joy of missing out. And I'm kind of like you. If I get plans canceled on a Friday night, I'm like, woohoo, I get a quiet night, put on some comfortable clothes, go on the couch, take out a book, watch one of my shows. It's wonderful, like, like a
Yeah.
present to yourself to do that.
I was reading, I don't know if it's true in Canada now, the American Time Use Survey, finding that over the last couple of decades, that Americans are actually spending more time by ourselves. Are you saying that we're not using that time productively, and by that we're not getting the kind of restorative experience by having some what appears to be extra time?
Yeah, that's a quite an insightful description, I would say, because just like, spending time with other people but not feeling connected and not having engaging or intimate conversations can leave us feeling, sort of more lonely. Spending poor quality time alone, again, time alone that is kind of forced upon us, or time alone that we are have in our heads as a punishment, right? And you mentioned, we can send kids for timeouts into their rooms, and
We
we
do.
punish prisoners, with solitary confinement. And there's this idea that solitude is only a punishment and it's something that is kind of inflicted upon us. But of course, solitude can also be a reward. Right? You can imagine, parents of a young family. Mom's been working all day. She comes back and she's got three kids that she has to get to bed. And she's, by the end of the night, she's absolutely exhausted. The greatest gift that you could give, the greatest reward that you could give her is some me time, right? A chance to have that break from what's going on. I mean, solitude offers so many potential benefits for us. It's a place where we can, calm down. It takes the edge off of negative emotions. It's a place where we can recharge our batteries. It's a place where we can have time to let our minds wander a little bit and do a little bit of self-thinking and self-exploration. And for me, it's one of the best places. It's like I consider it an incubator for problem solving and creativity, right? Because it's a place where we can really let our mind work on stuff that, it doesn't have the opportunity to do when we're so busy and engaged with other people.
But are we also talking about either what I would describe as perhaps goofing off? I mean, if that time is filled with doom scrolling or, frankly, watching TV, I watch a lot of TV because there's a lot of good stuff there. Is that a use of solitude as you see it?
Yeah, so again, I think Just to get back to what we were talking about before, it doesn't have to be meditation, right?
Right.
Doom scrolling is probably bad for you no matter
Right,
when or where you're
exactly.
doing it, right? So,
Yes.
and of course, technology is going to have, potential costs and benefits when we use it in solitude, but I don't think we should be making blanket statements. And I really think there's a personalized component here. And the most important thing is, I guess it depends on what you're using solitude for. So if you're planning a little bit of alone time where you're just going to let yourself recharge your battery and take a break from stuff, then go ahead and watch a video. Like, why? There's
Sure.
no rule that says you can't do something that you find leisurely, that you find relaxing. Give your chance for your brain to turn off. And if that means, playing Candy Crush on your phone, then go play Candy Crush on your phone. And, it's more important that you are, doing something that you personally are finding relaxing. Maybe you want to do something that's more engaging. Maybe you want to, do a hobby. Maybe you want to listen to music. You want to play music. You want to read. You want to knit. Go for a walk. I mean, it's kind of like you do you when it comes to solitude. As long as it's something that you are finding engaging and enjoyable, then you're going to get a lot of these benefits. And sometimes the mindless stuff is exactly what we need, right? There's actually pretty good research to suggest that if you're stuck on something in your head, if you can't solve a problem, then let your mind be mindless, right? Let it just wander around, and it often, bumps into stuff that's going to help you have a little aha moment, right? And figure stuff out. And we often get solutions to the problems that are troubling us when we are thinking about something else, or when we're just wandering in our minds. We make these kinds of outside of the box connections, and that's okay too. It's all right to take that time to do that.
You coined this phrase, a loneliness, which is adding an A to the front of the word loneliness. But are you saying that we're not doing enough either with the time that we have, or we don't have that time to recharge our batteries, to feel sort of reconnected with ourselves and frankly with other people, that we should be doing a better job with the time that we have with ourselves?
Yeah, so I mean, a few years ago, we got interested in the idea that, there's been so much focus on, what happens if you spend too much time alone and not enough time with other people. Of course, that's loneliness, and we've talked about that. That's the discrepancy, right?
Right.
But what about if you're feeling like you're not getting enough time alone? And when I went to look into that topic, I was amazed to see that not only has it not really ever been studied, but there wasn't a word for it in the English language to decide, to define the negative feelings that might arise from the perception that you're not getting enough good quality time to yourself. And so, like you said, we made one up. We called it a loneliness, kind of
Yeah.
this mirror image, right? A discrepancy between your desired solitary life and your actual solitary life. And in some, subsequent studies, we found that not getting enough time alone, it makes you feel stressed. It makes you feel sad. It can make you feel angry, right? Even some symptoms of depression. It's some of the same kinds of outcomes that we see with loneliness, and which kind of makes sense because it's a dissatisfaction, but it's a dissatisfaction with another component of your life, right? With your solitary life. And then, people got interested in that because we named something that they were feeling, right? You might be feeling grumpy and stressed and not even have a good idea about what's doing that. But it turns out if you, allowed yourself to plan out a little bit more alone time so you can get that battery recharged, you can get that reset, you could reduce a lot of those feelings of stress. And in a busy life, it's not always possible to get that good quality time.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation with psychologist Robert Copeland. And we're talking about his new book. It is titled The Joy of Solitude, and it's subtitled How to Reconnect with Yourself in an Overconnected World. And he is a professor of psychology at Carleton University to our neighbor in the north, Canada. Much more to talk about after this very short break, including a fascinating study having to do with sitting alone and electric shocks. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Our guest is psychologist Robert Copeland, and we're talking about many of the fascinating studies and stories in his new book called The Joy of Solitude, How to Reconnect with Yourself in an Overconnected World. You describe this really, I'm not sure how to describe this experiment, but nonetheless, students were told to sit in a room for 15 minutes by themselves and sort of sit with their thoughts. They were also given the chance or the ability to administer shocks to themselves. And over this 15-minute period, what did they do?
Yeah, so I had an interesting conversation with the researcher who did this. There's a gentleman named Wilson. This was done about 10 years ago. And he told me that they were having a debate in his lab about how much students would enjoy versus not enjoy just having a chance to have a break in 50 minutes sitting alone with their thoughts. And he was very much, of the opinion that they would find it relaxing, would be such a nice break because they're so stressed and they really would like to have the time alone. And so it was a pretty simple task. Sit in a room, no technology, They were given the instruction, sit alone with your thoughts. And then they asked them how they felt afterwards, basically, and what the experience was like. And they did this under a number of different conditions. And in one of the conditions, just as you described, before they went in, they's like, here, try this out. We want you to see what it feels like. Press this button and you'll get an electric shock. And so they got to try it out. So it wasn't just like a novelty thing. It wasn't like, oh, let's see what it feels like. So they tested it out. And then they said to one group, when you go in the room, if you want, feel free to press the button some more and give yourself more shocks. And so overall, they found that, I mean, maybe not too surprising. University students hate sitting alone for 15
I
minutes
can
without
only
their phone,
imagine.
right? Right. And they were bored and they didn't like it. And more than half of them self-administered at least a few electric shocks to themselves just to pass the time, which is quite a remarkable finding, right? So they found it so aversive that they would rather shock themselves than just sit and do nothing for 15 minutes, which is, I mean, it makes for a great story, and I'm glad we're having a conversation about it. But I mean, there's a few caveats I think we can add to that study. So yes, it's a study that allows us to tell a funny story about, university students not liking solitude, but it's also about being bored. It's also about having nothing to do for 15 minutes, right? And in some subsequent studies, it turns out that, we can adjust how people respond to that situation pretty easily. And some of it is just as simple as saying to them, okay, well, when you're sitting alone, because th these students were given no instructions, they would just sit alone with your thoughts. But if we tell students, sit alone with your thoughts, but try to think of some happy things, just have some positive thoughts, that actually improves their experience. Or if we let them read a short passage that says, here's all the good things that you get from spending some time alone, right? So if they change their mindset, if they reframe it as a potentially positive experience, they end up enjoying it a lot more and sort of reaping the benefits, which I think is a great lesson for all of us, right? So we talked already about how solitude is often thought about as a punishment. But if you can reframe it in your head as an opportunity, as a chance to get some good stuff, then that's already going to be the first step in making you have a more positive experience.
A couple of many of the students gave themselves one or two shocks, and I think putting myself in that room, I might do one at least to see what it felt like. But one of them gave himself or herself something like 160
Yeah.
shocks to like
That
make
was
it. I mean,
in a
talk about
footnote in the
boredom, right?
paper. Yeah. So I am going to not speculate as to why someone would want to, give themselves so many electric shocks in such a short period of time. Let's call that person an outlier and we'll leave
Yes,
it at that.
indeed, indeed. But I think again, it illustrates, it's almost like why solitary confinement is so horrific when it comes to people's mental health, because you are left to, I mean, there is no exit. You are left alone with your thoughts, and you're not given, maybe a book
And
of that can make you feel better about yourself.
it's forced upon you, and it's the worst kind of solitude, right? Pure solitude, it's sometimes called. Well, you have nothing to do, right? So it's not even just the solitude per se, it's just the lack of stimulus, it's the lack of boredom. And just to sort of pick up on this kind of stimulus idea, one of the metaphors that people use about solitude is it's a chance to step off the stage, right? So there was a sociologist named Goffman, and back in the 50s, he talked about, interacting with others is like being on stage, being in the spotlight. And we have to pay attention to, first of all, in ourselves, we have to moderate how we speak and our voice and choose the words that we're going to say. We have to control our facial expressions and our posture. And at the same time, we need to be paying attention to everyone else's, posture and body language and their facial expressions and how they're saying their words and what they're saying. And it's a real strain. And some people find that extremely draining, or they're very self-conscious because everyone's evaluating everything or they feel that way. And so for him, solitude was stepping off of that stage and out of the spotlight and a chance to catch your breath.
Well, which leads us to an interesting discussion about the difference between introverts and extroverts, which you spend a fair amount of time looking at how these kinds of people, and I think most of us are our mix of introversion and extroversion. Are introverts more attracted to solitude, or maybe even use solitude to their benefit in a better way than extroverts?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the, defining characteristics that most people associate with introversion is that they like to, like to be alone or like to spend more time alone. And of course, introversion and extroversion is a, it's actually a fairly broad personality trait, and it encompasses a lot of things besides just how much you like to socialize, right? It has to do with how active you are, it has to do with how impulsive you are, and how much you, seek out reward, and how much, you are energized by different situations. And I think the energy metaphor is pretty good for understanding. So for extroverts, if they want to rev themselves up and feel energized, they want to go where the action is, right? They want lots of noise, they want lots of people, they want lots of stuff going on, and that makes them feel revved up. And when they're by themselves, it's draining for them, right? And that's why a lot of extroverts, when they're in solitude, they'll go on their phone and try to talk to someone, or they'll text or they'll FaceTime, and I call it they social wash their solitude, right? Because they don't want to have any alone time, so they're looking for any kind of social connection or stimulus, even when they're alone.
They might be hitting that electric shock,
Yes, they're
right?
probably hitting that electric shock, right? And introverts are the opposite, right? So if
Yeah.
they want to recharge their batteries and feel stronger afterwards, they'll go off in a place where it's not so much input, right? And that solitude is an obvious place where that can happen. And it's also important to say, like, when they're out among people, introversion doesn't mean you're anxious or nervous about being around people, just that it kind of tires you out, right? And that they need a little time to recharge their batteries. And I think this leads to, a major piece of advice that I would offer people is that, like, we all need both, right? It's our job as humans to find that just right balance between socializing and spending time in solitude, right? It's like Goldilocks. It's like the classic fairy tale, right? So it's sometimes the porridge was too hot and sometimes the porridge was too cold. What you want to find is that just right amount, that just right balance between spending time with others and spending time by yourself.
You make an interesting sort of linguistic point here that, and I didn't realize it's that introverts has a kind of linguistic baggage associated with it that's seen as a kind of negative. And you have come up with a different word. It's called soloists, which I think is a nice reframe.
Yeah, so when we've asked a lot of people, like, what do you call someone who likes to spend time alone? We've asked this
Yeah.
to thousands of adults and thousands of adolescents, and people, again, most of the words that we use have a sort of inborn negative connotations, like a loner, right, or a
Yeah.
hermit, or and we call someone who likes to be around others like a social butterfly, or a someone who's sociable or outgoing, and these all have kind of positive connotations, which I think reflects kind of Western values around the the positive aspects of socializing and being part of the group, which I think is great. But you're right, I think we need a word that is not inherently negatively
Yeah.
slanted when it comes to that. So yeah, we just took the word soloist as a way to describe someone who just enjoys spending time alone, and that should be okay. Right? It should be okay to ask for time alone. And you mentioned right off the outset of our discussion that there's the reason to believe that spending good quality time alone can actually help our relationships with others. And I think
Yeah.
that's a really important point to make, right? It turns out that if you have good quality solitude and you're helping to sort out your relationship with yourself, there's research to suggest that later when you're interacting with others, those interactions are going to be more positive. They're going to be interpreted more positively. They're going to be, right? And so, imagine being part of a romantic couple and you're saying to your extroverted partner, I need a little time by myself. And, it's almost like you feel like you have to explain. It doesn't mean that I don't love you. It doesn't mean
Right.
that our relationship has problems. It doesn't mean that I don't enjoy spending time with you, right? Instead, you should just be able to say, I'm going to take a little bit of me time, but trust me, you're going to like it because afterwards we're going to get along better and we're going to interact better. It's going to be good for our relationship. And I think that's a great message to get out there, right? That just, you shouldn't have to lie that I have to wash my hair on a Friday night to stay home. It
It's a
should
get
be,
out.
right? It should be okay to just say,
Right.
I'm going to take a little bit of alone time now.
You have a half of a sentence in the book, solitude is dot, 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 dot. And I immediately put the word quiet. What are some of the other words that people have used? Solitude is blot, dot, 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 dot.
Yeah, so of course we get the full range of reactions, right? Some will say solitude is boring, solitude is empty, but some people will say, solitude is full, and that's a really interesting metaphor that I like, right? For some people, solitude is a place of emptiness and loneliness and bad feelings, but for others, it's full. It's full of opportunity. It's full of restorative feelings. It's full of self-exploration. And so, It's really important that we kind of celebrate those differences and that everybody understands that it's okay to have those kinds of differences. My favorite answer we ever got from someone
Yeah,
is
what
when we
was
were
that?
describing, you know, someone who enjoys solitude and what is solitude, and they said, "That's my spirit animal."
Lynn, and that is our guest today on The Connection, psychologist Robert Copeland. And again, we're talking about his new book. It's called The Joy of Solitude: How to Reconnect with Yourself in an Overconnected World. And he has been studying solitude for many years now. Do hobbies count? I mean, do you see doing hobbies as a form of engaging in solitude?
Oh, 100%. So solitude is a great chance for leisure, right? It's a chance to do things that we, like I said, that we enjoy and that we find meaningful. And a lot of people are very passionate about their hobbies. They, you know, whether it's, you know, making music or listening to music or doing puzzles or crossword puzzles or reading or watching videos. Like, again, these are all, you know, things that people, you know, allow themselves to have that leisure time, that me time. That is so important. And there's so many times in our lives when we're being pushed and pulled in so many different directions, and just a chance to focus on ourselves. And of course, it's hard, and not everybody has the same opportunities, but
No.
you know, there's so many benefits to ourselves from doing that, which ultimately, like I said, helps everybody else.
I'm imagining a busy parent who's got a job and a couple of kids. We referenced this earlier, listening to our conversation and rolling their eyes, saying, I have no time. And if I have time, I just fall asleep because I am so exhausted. I mean, it doesn't seem almost fair to be talking about this wonderful thing that we can enjoy when so many people feel like I cannot access that.
Yeah, there is. I mean, you know, parents of young children are actually among the groups that report the highest levels of loneliness, right? That's a main theme because, again, talk about being pushed and pulled in so many different directions. You know, even if, you know, a mom of three young kids decides they want to go in and close their door and have a little bit of alone time, how long before you get three little knocks or someone screaming outside and needs your attention? And so there are going to be times in our lives where, you know, our ability to fulfill our need for solitude and our need to belong, I mean, with others, are going to be under stress. And you can imagine a situation where, you know, parents of a young family are spending a lot of time around other people, but it's not high quality social connection. And they're spending some time alone, but it's not high quality time alone. So they might feel lonely and alone. They're like dissatisfied with everything. And it's going to be so stressful for them. So you're right. I mean, there are practical limits about how much time we can schedule anything into our day. That's why I think 15 minutes is a good ask. Right? That's not an unreasonable, you don't need 2 hour walk in the woods in order to feel the benefits of solitude. Even just a 15-minute catch your breath session can really have demonstrable effects.
You got interested in solitude from research watching young children playing, where you realized, yeah, little kids play a lot together, but they also play a significant time by themselves, perhaps in solitude. Help us understand what you saw and what you think that means.
Yeah, so from a very early point in my career, I was really interested in shy and socially anxious kids. And we spent a lot of time watching how such kids might behave in, you know, at preschool, daycare, and kindergarten, especially during free play when they had the chance to kind of choose how they wanted to behave. And not surprisingly, a lot of shy kids end up off by themselves in the corner. And what's interesting about shy children is that they really want to play. So they're interested, right? So they want to approach, they want to hang out, they want to, you know, be part of the group. But at the same time, they're scared and nervous. And so they kind of get stuck, right? They have this like conflict inside them that's raging. I want to play, but I'm scared. I want to play, but I'm scared. And so they kind of end off watching, but sort of not joining in. And so we spent a lot of time sort of identifying these kinds of behaviors and seeing what we could do to help. But at the same time, I saw another group of kids who were off by themselves playing. They seem pretty happy about it, right? Or reading a book or building with blocks or doing a puzzle. And other kids might come along and give them a nice invitation to play. It's not like they would turn that down. If it was a, you know, an attractive opportunity, they'd go and play and have a good time. And when they were done, they'd just go back and play more by themselves. And it seemed to me that this was really a different thing, right? These were kids who were using their solitude in a very different way. And that got me really interested in how that could be a good thing for them. And, you know, some of the things that we've learned is that for young kids, particularly, solitude is a great place to learn, right? It's a great place to explore and practice things and try things out. And for young kids at home, it's a chance to kind of deal with a lot of the big feelings that you get when you're a toddler at a preschooler and, you know, take the edge off of those negative emotions and think through and work through some of those, you know, what feels like these big, huge feelings. And so it's really important for parents, especially for young kids, to, you know, to build that into their routine, to give them a chance to get some solo play.
You also came to some interesting research and analysis looking at teenagers and how they use either time alone or time with each other, that perhaps their definition, especially with social media, about being alone, solitude, being together, might be different from their parents or their grandparents.
Yeah. So, I mean, the sort of the meaning and the implications of solitude changes developmentally, right? Yeah. It changes as kids get older. And for older kids, and I'll talk about teenagers in just a moment, but for older kids, you know, they're typically really programmed and busy, right? And so we see extracurricular activities after school, like they've spent the whole day in school around other kids, and then they go to an after school program, or then they go to a sporting program or arts. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it's great that there are all these kind of niche activities that, you know, that kids can find something they're passionate about and excited about, and that's good for them, right? But the problem is all of this planned activity stuff is a solitude thief, right? So, you know, there's so much pressure to be around other kids and you know,
fill the day, right?
Fill the day, right? And the kids are feeling peer pressure and they're they want to conform and be around everyone else that, you know, and do the stuff that these other kids are doing. And so for at this time, at this age, solitude is such a needed break from that, right? It's a chance to, again, step off stage, a little break from these social pressures. But parents have to be really mindful to make that part of the schedule because, you know, these kids' activities are conspiring, you know, unintentionally, but to take away that kind of solitary opportunities. And of course, you mentioned adolescence, and solitude becomes a really unique place for adolescents because, of course, there's big questions going on at this time, right? A lot of teenagers are figuring out, you know, who am I, or who do I want to be, or you know, who am I going to be? A lot of identity exploration, and solitude is a great place for figuring out who you are. There's increased desires for privacy. It's a chance to have that privacy, right? And it's a chance to think through and work through some of those large kinds of identity focused and who am I kinds of questions. And so it's an important place, and teenagers seem to realize that. So solitude becomes more of a normative, accepted kind of place for adolescents. And you mentioned technology, and here's where it gets a little bit interesting.
Because,
you know, we ask teenagers, what do you do when you're alone? Right. And a big chunk of them said, I FaceTime with my friends.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
So, I mean, think about that, right? Because it used to be if you were physically alone, you were in solitude because, you know, that's what it was. But now you can be physically alone and having, you know, face-to-face conversations with dozens of other kids. And, you know, that's considered solitude for some kids. And I think we have to look really carefully at that.
And we're almost up on a break here, but do you see the kind of restorative experience of solitude, even if you're on the phone with your half a dozen friends? Does it still work that way?
Yeah, so here there's, again, lots of individual differences, right? So for teenagers who are outgoing and extroverted and sociable, again, they're turning to these social interactions to hide from the solitude, right? To avoid having a time in solitude. And my advice for them is, you know, even though if you don't think you're going to like it, give it a chance. Right. So extroverted teenagers and adults, you know, even if they're not so excited about the opportunity, it's probably good for them to spend a little bit more time alone. And introverts who tend to want to spend more time alone, they need the little push in the opposite direction so we can find that sort of balance.
Well, let's take that short break and then we'll get back to our conversation with our guest, psychologist Robert Copeland. And again, we're talking about his new book, The Joy of Solitude, How to Reconnect with Yourself in an Overconnected World. And he is a professor of psychology at Carleton University in Canada. Much more to talk about after this very short break. So do stay with us. We'll be back in just about a minute. You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking with psychologist Robert Copeland, who says that choosing to be alone can be an enriching experience, not to be confused with the pain of being lonely. And he's got a new book called The Joy of Solitude. And we've been talking about why it's important to put aside time for solitude. It's a part of the human experience. It can enhance our relationships. It can calm our moods. It can also stimulate creativity. Robert, earlier you talked about for you, it's a walk in the woods or a walk in nature that really helps you feel restored. You write about something called paying soft attention to nature. What is that?
Yeah, so there's this theory that when we are out in a noisy, busy place, right, it grabs our attention. It demands our attention, right? So imagine yourself walking down a busy city street and there's, you know, cars are honking their horns. And there's music in the background and people are talking and you know, you're going across a busy street, you got to pay attention. Everything is grabbing you. You're like, you're flicking from one thing to another. It's an overwhelming kind of experience, right? And you can imagine how having all that erratic input is stressful for you, right? And I like to think of it as, riding in a car with the windows down on the highway, right? It's a constant pressure, it's a constant sort of noise that puts on you. And then, when you've been in the car for a while, you might not even really be consciously noticing that pressure and that sound. But when people roll up the windows, then it's like, right, you suddenly find yourself like with the pressure cut off. And that's what being in nature often is, right? So the kinds of things that we experience in nature, we call that a soft fascination effect. So it doesn't demand us, it kind of asks gently for our attention. So I mentioned before, you might have like some birds in the background or the wind, on the trees, and there's much less change in your visual input, right? So you're seeing, nice green leaves and some branches, and it's not, the clouds in the sky. And so what happens is your nervous system almost, it's like it takes a big exhale, right? It's like a big, and it gives you a chance to kind of reset. Your heart rate slows down, your breathing slows down. And this is why solitude, particularly solitude in nature, has that kind of restorative effect. That's how it recharges your battery.
Because you're not necessarily thinking deep thoughts. You're just sort of being in nature and feeling those endorphins, the dopamine, all the kind of pleasure chemicals that make it such an enjoyable experience.
Exactly. And you don't have to think deep thoughts, right? Again, you're letting your mind wander. And as we talked about a little before, it's when your mind wanders that it wanders to places that helps you figure out stuff, right? It helps you solve problems. It's a place where creativity can really be fostered. And it's a little bit counterintuitive, right? Because one would think that you really need that stimulus to make these connections, and you really need to be among other people. And there's actually some really interesting research showing that it's that balance, that switching back and forth between like an animated discussion with others where you're talking and sharing your ideas and bouncing stuff off and having a really good, exchange. Then you go off by yourself and you let everything incubate and you think about it, or maybe you think about something else and your brain's working on it in the background. And then you go back and forth and talk about it. That kind of, alternating between solitude creativity and sociable creativity seems to be the best recipe for being the most creative, for coming up with the most interesting ideas.
What about us ruminators that, left to our own devices where, the brain is like chewing on things that feel unresolved and
That is a
infuriating?
tough one, right? And that's why sometimes it's good not necessarily to do nothing, right? So because some people, when they are doing nothing, so maybe they won't choose the electric shock, but it's almost like their brain is shocking itself by thinking about all these worrisome things and in anticipation of something that might be, feeling stressful that's coming up, or over replaying something that happened previously. And so that's why sometimes when we're by ourselves, it's good to engage ourselves in something that's going to at least point our mind in a specific direction to help us, break that cycle of repeatedly thinking about the same negative thing.
So I mean, I guess it's a kind of cognitive way of trying to transplant different kinds of thoughts and feelings into our head.
Yeah, and so I mean, there are a lot of actually really good techniques for stopping that kind of negative cycle. That, even just some simple breathing and focusing in on your breathing can give you something to pay attention to that will sort of interrupt that thought cycle, or making a conscious effort to do something else in your mind. There's some, people play like even little word games in their head where they will, think of a name, or think of a, any kind of word, and then think of three words that start with each letter of that word. And it sounds like a kind of a trite little silly thing to do, but it focuses your mind on something and it interrupts that cycle so that it's not just wildly spinning on something that's inappropriate or something that's making you feel, nervous or anxious or stressful. It's just like, it's like putting the brakes on for a second. It allows you to kind of reset.
What's the kind of, I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but what is the connection then to creativity, the ability to sort of use our brains in solitude? How does that connect us to problem solving or even the creative process?
Yeah, so it turns out that, there's a certain configuration of our brain that is sort of activated when it is allowed to, not focus too intently on one specific thing, right? And so, not getting into, neural networks too detailed, but our brain works in such a way that when it's wandering, when we are allowing our mind to just go where it goes, it sort of allows it to forge these kinds of outside of the box connections that we've been talking about. And it turns out, there's been some interesting research to say that you have to be a little bit bored, but not too bored, right? right? So you, if you're engaged in some kind of activity that's allowing you to focus a bit, but not too much, right? That's why so many people have good ideas in the shower, for example, because you're doing something, but it's not demanding a huge amount of your attention. Or some people have great ideas when they go for a long drive because they're focused on the road, but it's not demanding a huge amount of their attention, although of course it should. And so it's like we're focused on something that we're relatively comfortable doing. It's not making us really have to think all that hard. And then in the background, our brain is working overtime unconsciously to connect all these ideas. And then suddenly it just pops into your head. You've got the solution.
You mentioned maybe this is for people who are ruminators, but using a diary or a way, I guess, of writing down perhaps what you're feeling, where your mind is going while you're in solitude with yourself, obviously.
Yeah, I think there's a few ways that a diary can be helpful. One way that I would suggest is to keep a diary about your solitude schedule and your mood over the course of a week or two. And so, you know, we talked about finding that right balance between socializing and solitude. And of course, that's different for everyone. And that's really important. And that makes me very hesitant and sort of suspicious about people who say everybody needs 4 hours of solitude a day, or exactly. Right, everyone needs to interact with others for 6 hours, and right, like that might be true for one person, but it's not necessarily because it's true for them, it's definitely not true for other people, right? And so we all have to find that balance. And how do you find that balance? Well, part of it is a little bit sort of trial and error, and just keep track of it. So you know, for a week, at the end of the day, just keep track of how much time you spent alone, how much time you spent with others, and what your mood is like, and see if you can find some patterns. And if you're able to, and again, life is stressful, we're all busy, so it's, you know, we don't always have the luxury of being able to adjust our schedule. But again, 15 minutes, not a huge ask. Make slight adjustments to your schedule, make a little bit more of a, you know, of a mindful planning to get some of that solitude time in, see how it impacts your mood, and see if you can sort of maximize your mood based on that right combination that's just right for you.
You've landed on 15 minutes. Is that because that just seems like almost anybody can carve out that amount of time for themselves?
Yeah, I don't think there's actually a huge scientific reason behind why it started as 15 minutes. I think, you know, when people started studying this, it just seemed like a reasonable sort of ask. I think there's some research to suggest maybe even 10 minutes might be enough. But I'm not even saying that 15 minutes is going to be enough for most people. It's just kind of like, it's like a good starting point, right? So if you're going to run a marathon, you don't start off by running 26 miles. You start off by going around the block, right? And so we all have to kind of build up our capacity for solitude. We've got to build up those solitude muscles. And even 5 minutes, if you want to start with 5 minutes, start with 5 minutes. And then, you know, next week, do 10 minutes. And the week after, do 15 minutes and build up those muscles. Take it slowly, do it a little bit at a time, and give yourself a little push to do so. And I think, you know, we all need social connection. We all need solitude. Introverts and people who enjoy spending time alone, that's great. Push yourself to spend a little bit more time with others because you need that too. Extroverts and social butterflies and people who love spending time with other people, push yourself to spend a little bit more time alone because you probably need that too. We just got to find that right balance.
We've talked about young children, teenagers, busy parents raising children and holding down jobs. I'm wondering about older people who you know, makes sense, have more time. Oftentimes that is time alone because they might have lost their partner or are losing friends, so that their social world is getting smaller. Is solitude or the hunt, even the benefits of solitude, does that change with age at all?
Yeah, so I mean, there's been a lot of focus, and for good reason, on social isolation in the elderly. And you've mentioned some really important, you know, reasons why that might happen: major life changes, you know, and illnesses that might restrict your ability to socialize, or loss of a partner, or you know, loss of a friend group. And so that really is, you know, something that we need to make every effort to make sure that, you know, everybody gets their social connection. And there is really good reason to pay attention to that, and to, you know, try to find any possible way to add to social connection, even if it's just, you know, small social exchanges. We know that even just talking to a stranger for a few minutes can make our mood better, even if we don't think that it will, right? We're pretty lousy at predicting how that's going to do. If you ask people, are you going to enjoy speaking to a stranger? Most of them will say no, and try to go out of their way to not do it. But it turns out that still makes you feel better, even if you don't think that it's going to. And so, you know, anything that we can do to strengthen the social networks of older individuals, I think we should do. But it is also in some ways an opportunity, right? And I think, reframing some of that solitude as instead of I'm being punished because my friends, aren't here now, or I'm being punished because I'm a widow. If you can at least reframe and see some of that solitary time as an opportunity and use it as a place where you can do things that you would like to do, where you can have some autonomy, where you can have some control. And it's a place that also allows for reflection and a chance for understanding yourself. It's a chance for religiosity and for spirituality and for connecting with yourself or connecting with a higher power. Like there are really so many unique things that we can do in solitude if we can understand that it's not always a punishment, that sometimes it can be an opportunity or even a gift.
I was thinking of the fact that the United States either thinks of itself or we have a reputation for, individualism, that you make it in the world because of your hard work and your brilliance. And I was thinking about that in terms of solitude. And again, I don't know how things are up there in Canada, if it's any different from down here in the States. But this sort of focus on individualism, whether that makes us lonelier because we don't think we need other people, or whether it opens up an opportunity for solitude because it's just us and ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I mean, you're, of course, there is that focus on individualism and focus on respecting of individual rights and the importance of independence. But at the same time, I think that's sort of embedded within a larger sort of Western framework about the importance of being with others and about the importance of socializing. And whether it's on social media or in popular press or wherever else you're going to see stuff, there's a huge amount of pressure in all Western cultures, including the US, to go out and be among other people, right? So it's an interesting kind of dichotomy. On the one hand, right, you've got this focus on individualism and focus on respect for beliefs and independence, but it's almost like that's within this broader framework but understands that we're all connected, we're all part of a larger thing, and so it makes for some tension, I think, right? And at the same time, despite this focus on individualism, despite this focus on attention, we still talk about hermits. We still talk about loners. We still talk about, and you have reason to be concerned. A person alone in their cabin, on a typewriter, this is a potential threat. This is a potential problem. And someone who lives with five cats and that is, it has a negative reputation. So despite the focus on individualism and the focus on independence, the society still kind of looks down on people who are choosing to be by themselves, even choosing not to marry, for example, or to live by themselves, or to spend more time themselves. It's still kind of contrary to the broader societal, idea that people are better when they're around other people, which of course is true for a lot of reasons, but not all the time.
Well, and it's interesting because at least in the States, there are more people that are living alone, either choosing not to live with other people or not to get married. So again, this sort of interesting tension between the group and the individual.
Yeah, and it raises this broader sort of issue about if it's culture that respects choice and that respects individualism, then it should be okay to choose to spend some time by yourself. It should be okay to choose not to marry. It should be okay to not socialize a lot. And I still think that's a work in progress. I still think there are a lot of sort of negative societal ideas and memes around people who are cat people or who live by themselves or don't, right?
Yay,
Like,
cat people.
and yeah, right? And I mean, all in good fun, sure, but it's also a larger tension. I think that you've done an interesting question about, which is, how do you connect that idea with this focus on individualism and on independence?
You have been studying and interested in solitude for, I think I read something like 30 years, or certainly many, many years. I mean, what has kept you hooked on this topic, on this issue?
Yeah, so I mean, it's been over 30 years now that I've been studying this topic in one way or another. And for me, I mean, it's such a fascinating topic because it's such a part of the human experience. Like everybody spends time alone. But at the same time, it's such a vast and detailed and layered experience, right? People experience solitude so differently. There's so many different reasons why we might choose to do it. And for something that is just an everyday normative thing that everybody does, literally everyone spends time alone, it always amazed me that this wasn't, such a major focus of research attention, that this isn't something that we paid so much attention to because it's such a fundamental part of the human experience, but we've kind of just sort of taken it for granted or not really looked at it. So I'm absolutely fascinated by what we still have to learn, and we still have so much to learn about the quality of these experiences and under what circumstances and for whom solitude can be a positive versus a negative experience.
And where do you stand on the introversion extroversion scale?
I think, I mean, it's funny because people think that everyone is either an introvert or an extrovert.
Yeah,
And of
right.
course, only a tiny proportion of the population is really falling at one of those extremes. Like the vast majority, two-thirds, 60, 70% of people are comfortably in the middle from that. So I think that's me too. Although I think as I get older, I get a little bit more introverted. I definitely enjoy my alone time a little bit more. And sometimes I think I won't like to go out and be with people, but then I do and I love it and it's great for me. So for me, it's like everybody else. I'm trying to find that right balance, right? What's gonna, I need to be around others, and I have cherished people in my life that I want to spend time with and help me be, a good person and help me feel good and et cetera. But I also can use a little bit of time just to kind of catch my breath. I think that's probably a pretty common experience.
Well, Robert Copeland, thank you. Copeland, excuse me. Robert Copeland, thank you so much for joining us today on The Connection.
Thank you so much for having me, Marty. It was a pleasure.
A pleasure for us as well. And again, our guest has been psychologist Robert Copeland. And again, the book is titled The Joy of Solitude: How to Reconnect with Yourself in an Overconnected World. And he is a professor of psychology at Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada. And thank you for joining us today on The Connection. The show airs every Friday and Sunday at noon right here on WHYY. You can download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen on the WHYY app. You can follow The Connection on Instagram, and you can find the show on Facebook. Check out our website, whyy.org/The Connection, for information about upcoming shows and to sign up for our newsletter. Al Bang's the engineer for today's edition of The Connection. The show is produced by Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscow-Wing. Thank you for joining us.